You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. Want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world.
Creío que por ser yo bueno puedes ir pisando por donde friego. Crees que eres el sitio donde estoy cayendo, pero con la misma que has venido te puedes ir yendo.
Porque te advierto que me cansé, que pa' los tontos tenemos tope, y esta vez voy a aceptar aunque sea de rebote. Porque te perdona, pero hasta los tontos tenemos tope, y esta vez voy a aceptar aunque sea de rebote. Tú te has creído que por ser yo bueno que puedes ir pisando por donde friego. Crees que eres el sitio donde estoy cayendo,
pero con la misma que has venido te puedes ir yendo. Porque te advierto que me he cansado, que hasta los tontos tenemos tope, y esta vez voy a acertar aunque sea de rebote. Porque te he perdonado, pero hasta los tontos tenemos tope, y esta vez voy a acertar aunque sea de rebote. No te escucho, ua, ua, ua. Hablas mucho, a ver si te callas ya. Cuando quieras baja a verme, ya verás la que te espera. Con culebras y serpientes, voy a meterte en la nevera. Cuando quieras baja a verme, ya verás la que te espera. Con culebras y serpientes, voy a meterte en la nevera. Creío que por ser yo bueno, puedes ir pisando por donde friego. Crees que eres el sitio donde estoy cayendo, pero con la misma que has venido te puedes ir yendo.
¡Vámonos!
Tú que te has creído que por ser yo bueno, puedes ir pisando por donde friego. Eres el sitio donde estoy cayendo, pero con la misma que has venido, era...
¡Vámonos! ¡Vamos, Kiko! ¡Díselo! ¡Dale tu veneno! ¡Pache! ¡Eso es! ¡Eso es!
My head's a little mess right now. As the sun creeps through my window, a blank piece of paper I can't seem to fill. Last night, your face, if it looks peculiar. 'Cause we regret things that we said. I can't shake the feeling that it's over. That it's over. You keep getting in my head. I wish that I could just forget that I held you and that I knew you. So if you love me, let me go. I'm such a cliche, yeah, I know. We don't have to talk about it, 'cause I've been hurting way too long. Such a shame we got this wrong. My feet can't touch the ground right now. Cause I'm scared of what they'll do. I can't trust myself and you know it. You know I keep running back to you. Cause I got voices in my mind telling me that I'm not right. That it's over. That it's over. You keep haunting every step that I take towards the edge. To forget ya. To forget ya. So if you love me, let me go. I'm such a cliche, yeah, I know. We don't have to talk about it. Cause I've been hurting way too long. Such a shame we got this wrong. We don't have to talk about it. I'm choking on these thoughts of provoking me. Something, something that I can't see. Something lost within me. I'm shaking, these feelings I have for you fading. Fading like a memory. These moments only temporary. So if you love me, let me go. I'm such a cliche, yeah, I know. We don't have to talk about it. Cause I've been hurting way too long. Such a shame we got this wrong. We don't have to talk about it. Such a cliche, yeah, I know. We don't have to talk about it. Cause I've been hurting way too long. Such a shame we got this wrong. We don't have to talk about it.
And welcoming you to this morning session here on your number one talk radio station, this primarily being the My Sunday Morning Take. We've started a Sunday, but I don't want to say our Sunday started weirdly, because it literally happened during the course of our Saturday. But it actually does lead into an interesting conversation for this morning session, specifically of My Sunday Morning Take, because it's not the first time that this kind of event has transpired. If you don't know what the event is, if you don't know where you were, okay, let me rephrase that. You obviously knew where you were. You obviously knew what you were doing on your Saturday, but this is an interesting particular take specifically because, well, in the past 30 years, we've never seen something like this specifically with what happened to the now deposed president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro. And it has made things interesting. It has made things peculiar. The reason why I say peculiar is that if you look at it, some of the particular details, obviously, from what the United States is highlighting is that the Venezuelan president will be charged on criminal charges in American courts by American prosecutors, meaning their, you know, their, what do they call it? You know, their local, you know, state officials will obviously be charging him and his wife. And this is an interesting scenario because you then get to ask the particular question of obviously, you know, what's going on here? Because this is not something sanctioned by the United States, you know, legislation or legislative, but rather it's something sanctioned by the United States executive, meaning the president and all government branches of the United States government. Which makes things a little bit weird because the template that we've seen specifically that has been a template of, you know, not going to such a particular length has been the template of avoiding full-scale conflict. Now, there has been such a weird particular scenario that we would have seen, that we have seen. This was specifically a little bit, if I can say a little bit, before my time, being that during this particular period when this guy existed, I was basically still a kid, basically still a child. And the interesting thing is that on the 3rd of January 1990, and this is after a specific operation began, specifically an operation that the Americans began themselves, which is something similar to what we would have seen happen to Maduro and to Venezuela, is that an operation by the name of Operation Just Cause began in 1990. Well, not in 1990, but on the 3rd of January specifically, that being yesterday, the operation came to its, you know, conclusion when the former Panamanian president, Manuel Noriega, had basically handed himself over, or he surrendered to U.S. forces. And this is after Noriega had decided to go and hide within the Vatican embassy in the city of Panama, or in Panama City. And for 2 weeks, he, you know, didn't want to come out of the particular, location. It's something similar to what Julian Assange did, you know, going to, I think it's the Ecuadorian embassy. Ecuador, who's also a neighbor of Venezuela. And we see this similarity, and I call it a similarity, specifically because for, well, 2 months since September, the U.S. Navy had been positioned within or just outside the national waters of Venezuela. And this obviously being the weird, that hence the reason why I say the weird particular Saturday that we've had, with the particular reverberations still being observed, meaning, you know, whose reactions are taking place across the world, and what are these reactions. Back in last year, in 2025, we obviously saw the very weird bombing strike that happened in Iran, and that there's also a particular perspective highlighting that, you know, they, and I say this, these are rumors, because so far the particular military personnel that had to review whether or not the actual damage had been occurred, because things actually popped off or started flowing very quickly after the IAEA's director general you know, gave a particular media briefing, and after that media briefing, things just went south from there, you know, specifically against Iran. And we see a similar sort of like an aspect in terms of trying to make a statement, but this time the statement obviously highlighting, you know, the removal of a national leader. Now, here on this morning session of the of my Sunday morning take, this has obviously been a scenario that has long been dominated in terms of what kind of bilateral relations exist between the United States and countries from the South American hemisphere. Obviously, the U.S. does not look at the South American and Central American countries as being, you know, part of the Global South discussion. The U.S. views them obviously under the Monroe Doctrine, which is pretty old by now, because there's obviously been many particular, you know, improved sort of like foreign policy elements being developed since then. And that's being positioned in terms of how they view Central and South America. Is that they view specifically they flip the hemisphere discussion on its head, and they view Central and South America as part of the Western Hemisphere. Now, the Western Hemisphere in this particular discussion makes things interesting because it means, you know, it's pretty narrow and it's pretty tiny. Obviously, in this scenario, there has been much particular sort of like, if we can call them low points and high points between the United States and various Central and South American nations. And on today's particular session, we'll be taking a look specifically at one of these particular low points that has seen something similar to what happened to Nicolas Maduro. Now, to give you some of the main talking points of what emerged yesterday, actually from our early morning session into the rest of yesterday, has been primarily that a military operation took place. The military operation's aim was to breach and gain access to the presidential palace in Caracas, which is the capital city of Venezuela. Strategically, if any of you have seen a map of Venezuela, is that the capital city, Caracas, is literally a beach city. So it's on a beach. You know, it's literally on the shoreline of Venezuela. And the developments obviously saw the United States firstly immobilizing much of the Venezuelan military targets and military installations. This is from air bases to military camps to facilities that host law enforcement and defense forces, as well as also other. They also struck the infrastructure, the electricity infrastructure of the city of Caracas, because many people were complaining that their power supply got struck, and you know, the electricity went off. And that's obviously most of the action then occurred around the presidential palace, which saw U.S. special forces infiltrate, breach, and thus extract the head of state of Venezuela and his wife. According to the press conference that Donald Trump had yesterday, or late yesterday afternoon, which was their Saturday morning-ish session in the U.S., is that much of the casualties were on the Venezuelan side. And that the scenario is also that there are still American forces on the ground, specifically in the capital of Caracas. Now, this makes things peculiar, and this makes things weird. Hence the reason, if you have scoured the social media landscape in terms of trying to understand the impact of what has happened, what has transpired, in many particular cases, I've tried looking for the UN Security Council engagement on this platform, on this particular subject matter. So far, I think there will be probably a emergency, or there would have been an emergency engagement about this. But obviously, it's a scenario that is still very active. And when I say it's very active, dear listeners, is that we have to see what these charges look like. Now, the main charges, obviously the main accusation that has been the rhetoric for the whole of 2025 has been the accusation of drug supply, of protection, of giving protection to a known cartel in Venezuela. So those are the first two, and of being a country harboring, specifically drug cartels, and Venezuela's other accusation, or the other accusation leveled to Venezuela, is that they are actively trying to destroy the United States, specifically through the use of drug cartels and the narcotics trade to the U.S., which has seen specifically the slow introduction of the strike on boats that you would have seen, and thus has culminated specifically in the events of Friday night and yesterday. as well. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, the similarity that I present to you specifically would be a discussion like Operation Just Cause, where in 1990, Noriega had a similar particular kind of a, if we can call it a removal strategy instigated against him. And obviously him being the head of state of the Central American country of Panama, which houses the Panama Canal. And Panama, remember, was one of the particular sort of like colonization targets announced by Donald Trump as well during his presidential inauguration. And the executive orders that were being cited is that Panama should become part of the U.S., which the Panamanians were like, no, 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 definitely not. So we have this particular precursor that starts off on this Sunday morning session, obviously with, the volatility of Saturday and Friday night. And we've got to look at things heading on from here onwards. Now, we'll quickly take a musical break, dear listeners, and we'll come back right after that.
Just another night, feeling lost. Peace is hard to find, never forgot. Just lying underneath the stars. My feet stand on earth, my head's on Mars. Just daydreaming to find your heart. Way too long, all of the pain leaving, counting my blessings one by one. You pick me up, you hold me high, show me the ladder up to the sky. Forever strong, always a shoulder, my comfort help, the days I hate myself. You speak the words I need to hear, but it always works, you lift me up. Show me the ladder up to the sky. Forever strong, always a shoulder. My call for help. The days I hate myself.
right there were the sounds of the group Take That, and welcoming you back to my Sunday Morning Take, dear listeners. It's about 5:30 and you're here in my company from 5 a.m. up until 7 a.m. The morning is lovely wherever you might find yourself. The air is cool, obviously, for those of us that have been drenched in some showers, in some summertime showers during the past 2 weeks. Obviously, it has moved a little bit away from the capital, and it's obviously, you know, holding out in certain other places of the country. If you have been blessed with some lovely overnight showers, dear listeners, you know, accept it, because in many particular cases it helps with cooling the weather and also with other particular, if we can call it like agricultural needs in that regard. Now, getting back to where we left off with our, with this morning's discussion, because we're obviously looking at a unique operation that kicked off on the 3rd of January, 1990. And this operation's name was Just Cause. Now, at the end of Just Cause, meaning how it came to be, is that on the 3rd of January, 1990, the head of state of Panama, Manuel Noriega, decided to hand himself over to the American authorities. Well, I won't say authorities, because an army is not an authority, but decided to hand himself over to American officials, and specifically he was then charged on the 4th of January by U.S. Marshals. Now, his photo and everything was taken in Miami, meaning he was then flew out from Panama, where he had been holding up specifically in the Vatican Embassy in Panama City, and he was flown out from there specifically to Florida. Now, Operation Just Cause was a U.S. military action between December 1989 to January 1990. So for 2 weeks, or from December into January specifically, is that, you know, the idea was to remove Noriega. Now, it centered on the invasion of Panama for the purposes of moving the military leader of Panama, General Manuel Noriega, who was the country's dictator and de facto ruler, specifically from his office, and to extradite him to the U.S. to face charges of drug trafficking and money laundering. Now, you would be asking, why does that sound very similar, Dwight, to just what you mentioned before the musical break? Because it is literally a similarity of what is facing, or what is going to be charged against Maduro and his wife. The next particular thing, obviously, from this has been, was that Maduro was someone that the United States actually had positioned in the presidential palace of Panama. So, foreign relations between Panama and the United States had grown increasingly strained during the 1980s. Now, this followed the death of the Panamanian leader, who was the president at that time of Panama, before Noriega became president, in 1981, was Omar Torrijos. Now, at that stage, Noriega was just a lieutenant colonel who had participated in the military coup that paved the way for Torrijos' rise to power. Now, Torrijos himself was a dictator, and a military dictator, because he literally, you know, had engaged in a military coup to become the president of Panama. And Noriega was part and parcel of that particular facilitation process for Torrijos' ascension into the presidential palace. Now, this also meant that Noriega consolidated military and then civilian power, specifically in Panama. Now, for decades, Noriega had also served as a paid informant for the American Intelligence Services, specifically known as the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA. Now, Noriega was also a supporter of the Contras, which was a counter-revolutionary force that sought to overthrow the Nicaraguan left-wing Sandinista government. If you don't know who the Sandinistas were, is that, and you can obviously hear from the illustration that it was left-wing, is that they, you know, this in the 1980s, obviously, it was at the height of the accusations of who is, you know, who is influenced by the Soviet Union and who's influenced by the Americans. And that accusation always was left, right, and center, specifically in the, we now call them, you know, what many people at that stage called the Third World, but the word Third World became a derogatory term, as well as also a term that highlighted, you know, in some other sense, it didn't actually speak towards the countries that decided to be part of the non-alignment movement, but rather to say, hey, listen, the label of Third World was like, you are not on the label of countries in the Northern Hemisphere, so thus, you are not worth the attention that should be given to your country and so forth. Now, the Sandinista, just to let you know, who were based toward the government group in Nicaragua, were a Nicaraguan group that overthrew the Nicaraguan president, Anastasio de Bail, in 1979, and who ended the 46 years of dictatorship by the Somoza family. That is also the situation that happened in Nicaragua. Now, the Sandinistas governed Nicaragua from 79 to 1990. And the Sandinista leader at that time, Daniel Ortega, was re-elected as a president in 2006, 2011, and 2016. Now, the name of the Sandinista movement comes from a Nicaraguan hero, a resistance hero, during the U.S. military occupation of 1927 to 1933 in Nicaragua. Now, Nicaragua is a neighbor to Panama, just also so that you understand that particular part. And this is obviously as, you know, the particular situation in Nicaragua, also obviously post the Second World War, was one, you know, in terms of what particular events and positioning the country of Nicaragua would have to do in the global order that was thus being carved out by both the USSR and by the NATO forces. Now, a political movement known as the FSLN was then founded in 1962 by a Carlos Amador, a Silvio Mayorga, and a Tomas Martinez as a revolutionary group that was committed to socialism and to the overthrow of the Somoza family. Now, that specifically, dear listeners, was just a sort of like a snippet in terms of explaining, you know, obviously who the, what was happening in the Nicaragua situation, specifically because Ortega didn't like the, you know, what was happening south of his country. And primarily, obviously, as the situation was, is that the influence was thus being directed through Panama and through Noriega in terms of influence by the Americans in the South American, Central American neighborhood. So now you've got that basis. Now you see that particular sort of like template in terms of what has been installed and the situation between not just Central American countries, but also what was at the heart of what was about to go down with Noriega. Now, the contrast, on the other hand, that Noriega supported, and this is where things get a little bit interesting. The contras, as mentioned, were counter-revolutionary forces that sought to overthrow the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. And specifically, if you had to think about who these guys were, think of them as, for example, the current sort of like Islamic State elements that are positioned within Mozambique, the particular remnants from the Angolan civil war that still, you know, was present there at the Namibian northern border, the Angolan southern border element. For example, the stories that we would have heard, you know, from many Namibians across the country in terms of, you know, what had happened in the early 90s, leading even into the 2000s at that stage. And then obviously in many particular scenarios, if you had to go, for example, into the DRC conflict, the existence of M23 in that scenario. So you can look at, through the same particular lens at the Contras, in the same vein, meaning governments using certain particular proxies in order to instigate certain particular violent actions or certain particular violent movements in that regard. Now, that's also the basis of the accusation that Maduro is facing. The accusation is supposedly using drug cartels in order to influence, you know, negatively influence way of life in the United States. And the other accusation that I saw specifically was the accusation that American oil companies were kicked out of Venezuela. And that one resoundingly just keeps bouncing up. And I was like, what? You're angry because your companies got kicked out of the Venezuelan economy. So yeah. So we see that particular picture in now real time scenarios, you know, becoming a lot more evident. Getting back to what happened to Noriega on 3 January, because it's literally it's literally almost like history repeating itself. The US literally on the 3rd of January, having an operation, or actually arresting a head of state from a Central and South American country in a similar style, with obvious, you know, accusations leveled against this head of state. Now, it became known, specifically in Noriega's case, that in addition to monopolizing power in Panama, Noriega had lined his pockets by smuggling illegal drugs into the United States. Why does that sound so literally familiar to the accusation against Maduro? Now, here's been the thing, dear listeners. In the past, if we say since September up until this week, this past week that ended, no one has seen any bona fide presentation of reports in terms of evidence being described. It's just hearsay, because the only way you know that something is being planned against Venezuela is when the US President Trump makes the announcement, or his cabinet, i.e. the Secretary of War, that being Pete Hegseth, or it being Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State. That's the only evidence you've got. There's nothing documented. Not even the people in the United States believe specifically some of the accusations, because they need to show evidence of this particular existence of, you know, that the activities are directly connected to the presidency of Venezuela. Now, another particular scenario that literally is history repeating itself in this conversation, because I'm continuously showing you the similarities. It's something similar that happened to Noriega, and Noriega was a bad guy. Let's be honest, guys. Military leaders are literally bad people. They've never been good. History has shown it through and through, but military leaders have never been good. The ultimate sort of like depiction of military leaders, you know, trying to do things properly has been that it has always ended in either violence. It has either created internal turmoil. It has either seen various particular elements of negative impacts. And whenever you have military leaders as presidents or heads of state, you can always, in many scenarios, you can always bet that the army believes in that country that they are the boss of things, which is not supposed to be the scenario. In terms of modern-day governance, sort of like government structures and how a government needs to operate, the military is not supposed to think that they are the boss of anything. They are just a defense force, and their purpose is to protect the country. Nothing more, nothing less. So, as you're obviously viewing this particular, this particular scenario around the world unfolding, and just what it looks like to everyone else, is that literally the operation of yesterday is literally what happened to Noriega. Now, the same accusation, obviously, of the smuggling of illegal drugs into the United States is the same accusation that Maduro faces. Even so, in the mid-1980s, allegations also started growing regarding Noriega's involvement in a brutal murder of an outspoken political opponent known as Hugo Spadafora. Now, here's the thing. When you have instances specifically where the military, where a military coup takes place and the military take over power in a country, which has also been the template Africa throughout, is that the first things that the military always does is that they dissolve things like the parliaments. They firstly dissolve things like the electoral commissions. They firstly dissolve and then they start using the police as a organ or as a mechanism of terror. They won't use the army themselves, but they instruct the police to literally be the sort of like the weapon against civilians. And the scenario obviously is that in many particular cases, the army doesn't actually develop things. They don't. They don't develop things. I'll say it again. They don't develop things. They don't. So when we sit in history and we look back at these particular interesting events popping up, during the timelines of how history unfolds, don't be surprised, dear listeners, specifically that military coup leaders, or specifically leaders that do things similar to what has been accused, because I'll say it again, not even in the United States has anyone seen actual tangible evidence of Maduro being, being guilty of the particular accusation that the United States has leveled against him, specifically being responsible for some sort of like drug trade being supplied, being operated directly by him as the president of Venezuela, which makes things fishy. Because the fishy result that keeps popping up since yesterday has been that the Americans did this to get oil, to get access to Venezuelan oil. Venezuela was part of OPEC. They were part of OPEC. The United States is not part of OPEC. As an oil-producing country, the United States is not part of OPEC. So this ultimately means that it has been Iraq, it has been Syria, it has been Libya, and now Venezuela. It's four countries that were OPEC members that have been targeted in the last 20 years if we can call it modern history, modern day history. These four these four countries that have large oil reserves, have been targeted and now obviously have been destabilized. They've been, supposedly Iraq is stable, but Iraq has got severe reconstruction that it's still, trying to achieve. But at the heart of it specifically has been that American oil companies need to be present in terms of operating the resource or getting access to the resource. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, we'll quickly take another short musical break. After that, it'll get us to the midway point of this morning's discussion here in your number one talk radio station. And we'll be getting into the rest of the particular Noriega discussion, showing you the similarities once again of what happened with Maduro is a strategy that has come out of the same American strategy book that happened in 1990. On that note, we'll be back right after this.
I was running out of time, inspiration hard to find. Across the Rio Grande, take me to your city lights, out by the riverside. I know you understand. Play me something down tempo, low key and rock steady. Body hitting like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger, love I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle, just one more night, just one more. The diamond crown, grew up in a border town, took me to an empty dive. Such a pretty silhouette, show me how to two-step. She brings me back to life. Play me something down tempo, low key and rock steady. Body hitting like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. Whiskey and ginger, love I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle, just one more night, just one more night. Oh. Tempo, low-key and rock-steady. Body hitting like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. No whiskey and ginger, love I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle, just one more night.
Understand me.
Coming back there, dear listeners, from the musical break right there, getting us into the halfway point, which is literally now at 6 a.m. And if you're just waking up, this is my Sunday morning take here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And what we've been doing in the first half so far has been looking, or technically highlighting, the similarities literally between the removal of Manuel Noriega in 1990, literally on 3 January 1990, versus what Nicolas Maduro and his wife on 3 January were also experiencing, and particular, you know, extraction under restraint from the capital city of Venezuela, that being Caracas. Now, the literal fallout of what has obviously transpired since yesterday, because everywhere I look specifically on my YouTube feed specifically, has been that, you know, all the political commentators are, you know, trying to come out and, you know, highlight various particular talking points, or they go and interview people on the street there in the United States, Venezuelan migrants. A migrant technically, And this is what makes things weird specifically, is that the comparison of people who were anti-Maduro and no one talking to people who are pro-Maduro in Venezuela, you know, makes things a little bit weird, because the celebrations obviously point towards the particular political actors in Venezuela, who the Americans believe should be the next president, or sort of like national leader of Venezuela. Now, this makes things weird. When I say it makes things weird, is that it literally is the similarity of events that has happened in so many countries in South America and in Central America. Specifically, the Americans remove someone who they don't like anymore based upon charges that no one technically knows what is the evidence from these charges. And primarily when the next person steps in, they step in under this particular, if I can call it, under this particular veil, which obviously is now removed. This particular veil of, are you someone that has been blessed by Washington DC specifically to play a specific role? Or are you actually here as a bona fide, meaning you act in good faith, legitimate national leader that the people of your country like? Now, when I describe to you that that situation, it's literally the picture of Noriega and his predecessor that he helped get into office, Torrijos. Now, when more evidence surfaced regarding Noriega's laundering of drug money and the sale of restricted U.S. technology and information, conflict between the Panamanian strongman and the U.S. government appeared inevitable. Specifically, given the, you know, the transfer of control of the Panama Canal under the terms of the Panama Canal Treaty. Now, the transfer of control was literally also the transfer of control situation with the Suez Canal. Now, if you know what happened, which has also been the same accusation that Donald Trump has made at the start of his second term, at the start of last year, is that Trump said he wants control of the Panama Canal. And the Panamanians, after that announcement, said like, oh, hell no. And then, because he justified, control of the Panama Canal means, let us also go and colonize Panama. Which, in many people's particular viewpoints, people were asking, what is this new age colonization discussion? What does this actually mean? Because it literally, if you have to look under the modern day doctrine specifically of, you know, what democracy is about, is that this, you know, is just rife with potential war of aggression, once again, which has been the same thing that, you know, many historians will tell you that in the Middle Eastern neighborhood or in the Middle Eastern theater of stability elements or stabilizing the Middle East for that matter, is that much of it actually, you know, was based on these supposed accusations of the previous heads of state not being, you know, friendly enough to NATO nations and especially the United States. Then their leadership gets removed, and then you get weird actors popping up everywhere. One of the latest weirdest actors obviously being that of ISIS. With ISIS now being found in places in Mozambique, as far south as Mozambique, as far south on the other end, specifically, supposedly, also here close to the Angola DRC vicinity. We've seen, for example, in our case in Namibia, there was this weird meeting that American generals had here with our former Minister of Defense back in last year, which when I read that report, I was like, what? Since when? Since when? And then the weirdest thing is also on top of that, dear listeners, I then go and read a further thing. I decide, okay, let me go. Okay. So this visit happened here between the Minister of Defense of us and these visiting American military officials. And then 2 weeks later, I decide, you know, because it had been bugging me. It had literally been bugging me. And then I go and read. I literally go into the Interpol website and I read that Namibia, Angola, there was another country, another two other SADC countries had completed a anti-terrorism exercise, policing exercise, under the auspices of AFRIPOL. AFRIPOL is a continental branch of Interpol, and this operation had been sponsored by the Germans, the German police and the German ministry of their policing ministry. And I sat there going like, okay, firstly, the German development agency and their involvement in Africa is almost everywhere, guys. Almost everywhere. They are obviously playing the particular kind of, you know, foreign relations or international relations playbook that you, for example, would see with the, you know, with the Chinese, you know, helping in terms of development projects and other particular elements like capacity development from various perspectives. And literally to see, and it was literally to do with terrorism. Combating terrorism, this AFRIPOL mission that Namibia was part of. The most interesting thing is that these are particular discussions that we don't get to see being displayed or being shared with a broader Namibian public. Because here's the question. Here's the question you've got to sit with. So that visit that the visiting U.S. military officials had to our Minister of Defense about, you know, the possible threats that Namibia can face from surveillance or surveilled elements outside of Namibia who could pose a threat in terms of terrorism activity to Namibia is something that Namibia needs to be cognizant of or needs to be aware of. So obviously you can view this as an intelligence sharing exercise. And then 2 weeks later, as I explained to you, the time frame where I decide to go and look up, okay, let's go and see probably, is there something on Interpol? And then boom, I see this thing on Interpol. It happened in October, just so that you know the time frame. The operation ended in October, was once again about combating terrorism on the African continent. And then there was another particular element in terms, oh yes, it was the discussion literally that the financial intelligence, the FIC and Financial Intelligence Center had with the civil society guys here in Windhoek, which is also a discussion that I attended. And the head of the FIC, he's the executive director of the FIC, explained there that there's more and more occurrences of Namibians, not evidence, just occurrences of Namibians who get radicalized by terrorist groups. Now, you can argue that in the specific perspective that you've now got a view, what happened in Venezuela yesterday and what happened in Panama 37 years ago is a picture of, okay, firstly, there's a whole bunch of accusations labeled against the head of state of the country. Not against the people of the country, the head of state of the country. If you obviously wanted a severe picture, the head of state of El Salvador, Bukele, who technically now many people consider him now a dictator to an extent, but Bukele's situation was that Bukele was voted in. You know, he didn't commit any sort of like negative acts against the Electoral Commission of El Salvador. He's not a military leader. I think he and I are the same age, or he's like two years older than me. And he was potentially one of Central America and South America's youngest presidents when he was voted in, because it's now his second term in office. and he overwhelmingly wins the elections because he's, you know, he's the kind of guy that is, that Donald Trump likes. He even endorsed Donald Trump's re-election back in 2024 because he showed up at a Republican convention where he told, you know, he gave a speech and he explained to the Republicans, hey, listen, guys, before he became president in El Salvador, because I watched the whole speech of Bukele. When he became the president in El Salvador was the murder capital of the world. Not just the city, not just the capital of, El Salvador is pretty small, guys. It's smaller than Comas region. It's not just the capital city of El Salvador that was the murder capital of the world, but also the whole country was the murder capital of the world. Meaning, so many deaths were being committed, that it just made it an entirely, completely unsafe space. Why? Because of El Salvador had one ugly export element that is not a very nice thing to even acknowledge. The country exported a gang by the name of M23. What's the guy's name? MS-13, sorry, yeah. MS-13. So the issue with MS-13 was that MS-13 was pervasive in El Salvador. MS-13 was present everywhere. MS-13, hired teenage boys, for various activities. MS-13 and El Salvador's major export, element was crime associated to drug trafficking. To where? Specifically the United States. And other places in Central and around the world, in Central America and around the world. Now, this particular kind of action has obviously seen the roller coaster ride that we've seen in 2025. The similar particular action obviously also stems into external elements being that, you know, there's an entity that impacts some element of global trade or one aspect of global trade. And this obviously is a survival strategy that in many cases the Americans look at. Now, a country like El Salvador, which is, I think, which is literally south of Panama, which features in our discussion today, but obviously it's north of Venezuela. They don't border onto Venezuela, just so that you know, is that the whole discussion around what happened with Noriega was that the Panama Canal needed to be handed over to the country of Panama, the nation of Panama. Now, this then throws a similar sort of like standoff point between Panama and the United States to what happened with Egypt and the British. Egypt and the, I'll call them Great Britain at that stage, Great Britain and France. Because Great Britain and France then used Israel to attack the Egyptians from the east and the, you know, various other particular sort of like militarist or military strategies were then deployed on Egypt. When Egypt went and asked, hey, listen, why is there this piece of infrastructure that is creating so much money in my country, but I don't own it? And it's literally a physical installation in my country. Why don't I own it? So what was the issue? Now, I have explained it before on my Sunday morning take, is that the origins of the Suez Canal company is that it was registered in the UK and it was registered in France. So it was a European company. Now the downside was that the Suez Canal company was technically a British-French state-owned entity. Let me say it again. It was technically a British-French-owned state-owned company. That company was running a physical piece of infrastructure in Egypt. Same thing you can argue and that you can see in the Panama Canal discussion. Now, the Panama Canal was an idea by the French. But the French couldn't generate enough capital, meaning enough money, to continue with or to start the project with. And thus, they sold the idea to the Americans, to an American company. And the Americans took this and then they continued with it. It's because the French started on one side, I think on the Atlantic side of Panama. They started on one side and they didn't have enough money and then they needed to, you know, generate more capital from somewhere else. And thus they approached the Americans and the Americans, you know, said, okay, well, let's take the rest of the project going ahead. Now, this ultimately meant that since the Americans obviously bought into this French idea, they actually then bought out the idea, and the idea was to own this channel, this canal. This canal point between the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. It makes turnaround time specifically of all trade to sail all the way around South America if you wish to get into the Atlantic, or trade specifically to try and get from one side of the United States, the western seaboard, which is the shore, the coastline of the US on the west, to the Pacific Ocean, to be connected to the coastline of the east, which is on the Atlantic Ocean side, a lot easier, because that brings in an extra like 7,000 to 8,000 kilometers of travel versus just the short little, you know, this detour here through Panama, and then you're in the Atlantic Ocean. Now, Noriega was acting funny in terms of the handover of the Panama Canal, or the terms of the Panama Treaty, the Panama Canal Treaty, sorry, because in 1988 Noriega was indicted then on drug trafficking charges by a U.S. grand jury. Now, so far we didn't see anything of that happening in Maduro's case. Maduro is, he and his wife are going to be tried in a New York court. And this is what makes things interesting. I'll throw in this, besides the conversation subject matter into this discussion. Back in 2020, during the height of COVID, Namibia's particular, okay, not Namibia, because it wasn't government officials that represented Namibia there, but there were Namibians there. This was a representation of Namibians and, their legal advisors in a court in New York regarding the genocide discussion between, the impacted groups in Namibia and Germany. And the first sort of like legal challenge taking place was filed in a court in New York. And the same New York court successfully ruled in favor of the German government's legal representation at the court, which said this court has no authority or no basis or no platform to sort of like bring any sort of like court proceedings against the German state for what the German state did or did not do during its colonial period in Namibia. And literally that same court said, yeah, you're right. Just to see now, obviously it's the American prosecutors now, or the American, what do they call that? Their Department of Justice. That's gonna file and charge Nicolas Maduro and his wife, who's the head of state of a sovereign state, in a court in New York. Now, mind you, anything legal that happens in the United States has got nothing to do with you as a country. Obviously, it has certain particular sort of like cascading you know, cascading events or a timeline of, or sequence and timeline of events that, looks suspicious. And from what I've seen so far has been that the Americans would say, or the American president, because in both scenarios, this is something that Ronald Reagan did, and now obviously that Donald Trump did, is they accuse another country's head of state of, you know, being a drug cartel member. Then they label, then they create a charge, reclassify under certain particular powers and provisions that the US president has by saying, oh no, this head of state of this country is a terrorist. So now you as the head of state of that country can be labeled as a terrorist, which gives the justification to the American law enforcement agencies and their military departments, the supposed authority, I say supposed, to go and arrest you. I let that sink in. I'll let it sink in, because that's literally the time of events that happened with Maduro. It's the time of events that happened with Noriega. But Noriega, many people and historians have cited that Noriega was not a good guy. He was not a good guy. Now, I can't say the same for Maduro, because there's a documentary that Deutsche Welle made. I still have to see it, specifically about, you know, Maduro's particular influence on the Venezuelan economy, and specifically how Maduro has done certain particular things. But the downside is, he did all this within Venezuela. He did not do this in Colombia. He did not do this in Jamaica. He didn't do this in Ecuador. He did this in Venezuela. The only potential international relations fallout that you can accuse Maduro of instigating something was the ambition by Venezuela back in last year to annex Suriname. Is it Suriname, or is it, what's the country that, I almost said Guam. Yeah, it's Suriname. Right next to Venezuela. In terms of who also now discovered the major oil reserves. But this country has got European Union and European ties. This territory right next to Venezuela. Now this makes things also more peculiar, because that's not the accusation that Venezuela faces, or Maduro faces. No. The accusation is drug-related activity. And that Maduro is the head of a cartel that only operates within Venezuela, this Tren de Aragua that Donald Trump kept referencing. Sorry, it's Guyana. The place's name is Guyana, not Suriname. Suriname is the other place alongside Namibia that is sort of like the new oil exploration kids on the block, I'll say, rather. But the place's name is Guyana, which has British connections. Guyana was a sort of like a small British outcrop, specifically and Suriname is right next to it. That's why I thought that Suriname was the one bordering onto Venezuela, but it's actually Guyana. And Guyana sits between Venezuela and Suriname. Literally, they're on the South American northern coast. The coast that features, that faces into the Caribbean. So, as we're obviously sitting here, dear listeners, now, Noriega's particular fallout was that Ronald Reagan approached Noriega, just like Trump apparently had phone call conversations with Maduro, in terms of, well, they were obviously now negotiating things. Because Maduro mentioned this on Friday, The last known particular sort of like imagery of him in Venezuela and also in the past weeks, 2 weeks, is that Maduro and Trump had phone call conversations that were supposedly amicable, meaning they were friendly in nature, they were cordial, and that they were, you know, that they were professional. Now, Ronald Reagan's administration offered a deal to Noriega, being that if he agreed to relinquish power and depart Panama, the charges against him would be dropped by the American government. But Noriega wanted no part of the supposed bargain. And then, obviously, it literally culminated in the full-scale invasion of Panama kicking off. But before we continue, dear listeners, we'll quickly take a short break and come back.
The festive season is a time for traveling, a time to reunite and celebrate with loved ones. But most importantly, it's a time to obey the road rules. Check your tires, wear your seatbelt, drive sober, adhere to speed limits, and walk responsibly. Do the right thing and save lives this festive season. Your family awaits.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
The festive season is a time for traveling, a time to reunite and celebrate with loved ones. But most importantly, it's a time to obey the road rules. Check your tires, wear your seatbelt, drive sober, adhere to speed limits, and walk responsibly. Do the right thing and save lives this festive season. Your family awaits.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Padre, Amahus, carrying how I hold this. Neske Kaising Hang Hansa, Ria Tosa Haisi Arms, Ministries Panagas, Aukos, Ami, Sing Huba Kabatoragas, this is a Huhasa, To Hoba de Haisi Amsa, Orisa Seka, Tisadu Tong in, and Ariaun, Sikurisan, Ha Toraguri. Oh, ne Ahasi, carrying how I Huba, Amati Amahus. Ahasi, di piba. Taring aroma, caring how I hooky and hanuting who, ting link hamae, so in mouse, twiska e habe, a amahin, oa, ma, so e queen, mouse car habe, even aman uis, damaska eo, amaheske, hose, and hanu una, wagao, ahasi. Taring how I huba, tabacoratas, hanumas, hanumas, quas coros, thumbs, may you sleep this gay, nadi, ahasiga. Chisera kain hanu onga amahus ti haragangu ovagu hanusi haragu marisi ti homes haraba a uyehe ha nuhasi homas amahus tamaska iyo o amas karin hawai hubiske ngangu was ti tamasa masiba nuhasi bina a aroma bata tare e nes tatsning anse iye Ari, how I hook ya up, what a dee, Toragu hera, ui, malqui, why in it, Kaiban, Amahu, gay, Sadu, Umisan, Unka, Ari, how I hook an Unka star, Sadu, how nasi, Umisadu, Unka, Si Sadu, Namibeba, Hauba, Hanu Unga, Ahasiga, Murika, Hana Iduka, Suis Kamain, Hanu Unga, Un Amahu de Hasa. Aisao, o nasa, ao nasi kai tuis, karim hao ainhu, abemas, tamaska iyo o, kaise, sats taba a tu, manesteris peros, sa abe namas taba, si muriri, ada sisen are, sada, karim hao ainhu tin uiga, waha, suriku aromang uisan, wa, manesteris ke tuis, kama i, wa ngai, hu, uikudi, hanu unga amahus, karim hao ainhu tis di in, Aroma, Eream Haba, Dide, Anshma Uhari, Karin Hawain Huke An Unha, Adan Iba, Wadan Aroma, Gorasa, Ti Abosasi, Uha, Gangans, Sa, Sisen Are Aroma, Nehisi Amski, Marisi Mahokas, Hanu, Republiki, Namibia, Ti, I, Aris Rabligi, Twitch Poop, Deep Haka Ha, Twitch Poop, Umkansis, Maritais, Ka Epis, Na Ua, Utrisa, Nasa, Ansa, Tohoba, Ministry Esperodi, sa abe pangatudi. Tamaska iyo o, haisa kain aresperos, ministries, hanakas, aukos, timbuk tabatoragas, disa. Saura tamikwas, kainga ngani, tui tam kainga kaisa, ngani, kainga hagastaba, tamibari. Horagan, harukudi ke, sisin uira, direkiri tanira, hua, uhe.
Coming back there from the extended break, dear listeners, and obviously where we find ourselves now as we head into or get closer to the 7 a.m. mark has been the interesting similarities that we've seen so far. And the similarities specifically that we present here on this morning's My Sunday Morning Take. Now, if you've been hiding yourself on a Saturday, or you decided not to be connected in any way or form to the world out there, and specifically accessing any elements of what has transpired yesterday, has been the shock of the century. Oh, goodness, shock of the century. I can't say the shock of the century. The shock of the start of the year so far, in that being that Nicolas Maduro had been taken captive by the Americans and has been flown to the United States and is currently being charged by a New York court in the city of New York as a head of state of a country. So the similarities obviously that I mentioned in terms of what happened to Noriega literally on this day in 1990 on 3 January, okay, not on this day, or 4 January, on yesterday, 3 January, is that Noriega was taken into custody by American law enforcement agencies and officials in the U.S. Army who had invaded Panama. Now, obviously, you can see that there's now a great difference between what happened to Noriega and to Maduro is that, yes, both came with a pretext and under the particular sort of like protection of the American Navy and Army and Air Force just to get one man. So what happened in Panama in December 1989 into January 1990 was that the U.S. invasion of Panama then got into motion. Now, this is after the new U.S. president, George Bush, that is now George Bush Sr., not George W. Bush, the son, obviously it's now during his particular tenure. So, despite the presence of the international observers, which included even the former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, Noriega annulled the results of the May 1989 Panamanian presidential election when it appeared that it had been won in a wide margin by Guillermo Endara, who was the main opposition civilian candidate. Now, this is something similar to what happened literally last year in Venezuela. Guys, the similarities are just too much. So, with the last presidential election that happened in Venezuela, the accusation came out just from the United States, not from anywhere else, just from the US, that Maduro had, or his party had interfered in the presidential elections and the results of Venezuela. And that supposedly the candidate that was against him, the other guy, who even came in as a backup candidate for the original candidate of that political party, had won with an overwhelming margin. But no one can verify these results. It's only the Americans that were saying this guy supposedly won. No one can verify these results. Now, obviously, in Noriega's scenario, Noriega annulled the results. However, the accusation in Maduro's case, or in Venezuela's case, was that supposedly Maduro's political party had interfered in terms of vote rigging. But no one can independently verify these results. So, similar scenarios. It starts with an election process. It always starts with an election process and one other economic element. Now, in addition to overturning the results of the election and obviously installing a former classmate known as Francisco, identified as Francisco Rodriguez as a puppet president, Noriega had Endara and his supporters beaten in the streets. You know, sort of political violence kicked off. Now, the Organization of American States, which was an entity that there's a whole few, I think, Cuba doesn't want to be part of it because Cuba wants to be part of it. But, back in 2024, the Mexican president at the time, not the guy before, before Sheinbaum, there was another guy, the Colombian president, the guy that's now very vocal, Gustavo Petro, and there was another head of state, there was another guy, who asked at the last OAS, the Organization of American States, if Cuba can be allowed to join this particular organization. And the U.S. back then under Joe Biden said no. No, 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 no. So with this particular scenario, obviously, the OAS, if you did not know, it's something similar to like the AU, is an organization that exists, but obviously the Americans don't view much value in the OAS, but they control the Western Hemisphere, specifically where Central and Southern America are based in. Now, the OAS responded by calling for a peaceful transfer of power in the country, that being Panama, to an elected government, and the U.S. president at the time dispatched about 2,000 troops to U.S. bases in the Panama Canal zone. So the American soldiers were already there. Now, in the meantime, having survived a coup attempt in October of 1989, Noriega persuaded the Panamanian National Assembly to name him the maximum leader. Yes, in inverted commas, we'll put that there. The maximum leader. On 15 December 1989. Now, obviously, this was a straw just too far for the Americans because at his behest, the assembly, that's now the Panamanian assembly, also declared that a state of war had existed between Panama and the United States. Within days, an unarmed U.S. Marine officer dressed in civilian clothes was ambushed and killed by Panamanian soldiers. Bush then responded quickly. On 17 December of 1989, he ordered 11,000 troops to be airlifted from the United States to Panama, further reinforcing the already augmented contingent of troops that are in the canal zone to bring it to 24,000 troops that were present in Panama already. And this is as the U.S. troops began invading Panama with the stated objectives of capturing Noriega to face drug charges in the U.S., protecting American lives and property, and restoring Panamanian liberties. Now, the initial attack, which took place in the darkness between the early morning hours of 20 December 1989, was focused primarily on Noriega's headquarters in the capital city of Panama City. On the first day of combat, Endara and his two vice presidents were sworn in to head the government of Panama, and although the U.S. forces overcame most of the organized resistance in short order, Panamanian civilians and soldiers looted shops in Panama City and in Colon, the other city, during the next few days, and an additional 2,000 U.S. troops were flown in to restore order. And in the meantime, Noriega eluded capture for 4 days before taking refuge in the papal embassy. So this is the Catholic Church. The Vatican City has, you know, obviously, as you know, it's the world's smallest country and city. And it literally has UN status because it's a UN member and it has an embassy. So Noriega went and hid in a Vatican or a papal nunciature, which is an embassy. And he remained there until he surrendered on 3 January of 1990, having succumbed to a sonic assault by U.S. forces who blasted rock music nonstop at the deafening levels at Noriega's sanctuary, which among, obviously, you know, were various particular songs that were blasted at the embassy. Now, Noriega was then transported to Miami and sentenced to a U.S. president, to a U.S. prison, sorry. And in the wake of the invasion, the OAS voted 20-1 to condemn what seemed to many Latin Americans an unwarranted, they call it Yankee, but they write it in a different way here. They write Yankee. A Yankee intervention. So, the fallout of what transpired by the U.S. invasion into Panama, which is literally also the U.S. invasion now of Venezuela, because there are American soldiers on the ground in Caracas, in the capital of Venezuela. There are. Reason being is that you always have to look specifically in military strategy. You always have to look at the first things that gives one or other side an excuse to do something. Now, what was one of the particular excuses? Out of all of this discussion that had transpired last night and yesterday, last night, and the early morning hours of Saturday morning yesterday, was that none of this action was based upon the American hostages that the Venezuelans, the supposed hostages that the Venezuelans had in custody in Venezuela. If you don't know, you guys would have heard, you guys would have remembered back in 2024 the American soldiers that were arrested in Venezuela. Just go read up on that. Which looked like an attempted coup, but they were literally mercenaries, these guys. Arrested and put in custody. This whole operation had nothing to do with American lives. It had everything to do with the aim of accusing a head of state of being a drug trafficker. That means any head of state that the Americans don't like for the next 4 years, because this is now year two, this is going to be year two of Donald Trump's second term, the next head of state can be accused of some other drug trade or some other random accusation that no one has evidence of, supposedly. And we all know how that works. The supposed evidence that led to the one million deaths of Iraqis because of a war that, and weapons of mass destruction that the Americans and the British still today cannot prove. They cannot prove it. No repercussions were meted out against the heads of state and the governments of those two countries. Because no one can prove where are these weapons of mass destruction. Where do they come from? Where does this information come from? Which makes the discussion specifically with Maduro and his incarceration weird. And just as the discussion came out, in yesterday's press conference by Donald Trump, Hegseth, and Rubio, is that this is about oil. And the Americans want oil because American oil companies were kicked out of Venezuela. Now, dear listeners, I'll leave you with this last piece of message before we get into the musical break. This sets a very, very ugly trend, a very ugly precedent, specifically between how other countries now view who will get oil, like Namibia. Now we don't even know if we want the oil. Because if you decide as Namibia to join OPEC, it makes things weird. Because none of the NATO countries are on OPEC. I'll say it again. None of the NATO countries are on OPEC. Much of the OPEC members are either friendly Middle Eastern countries, and you must be friendly specifically with Israel, and then be friendly with the US. And secondly, that you must be a country specifically, you shouldn't be antagonizing specifically the United States in one or other form, like what supposedly Venezuela had done. I say supposedly what Venezuela had done. Now, this makes things super weird for Namibia. Super weird for any other country. The accusation is out there, obviously, regarding the drug trade. You know, Mexico is in a precarious position right now because we all know of the cartels in Mexico and how bad they are. The question was asked in that press conference, what does it speak? What does it say? What message is this sending to Mexico? And Trump even said, you know what? We've asked Sheinbaum many times if we should deal with, the Americans should deal with the cartels. And according to him, Sheinbaum has said, no, we as Mexico, we are under control. We're in control of that situation. But much of the drug trade comes through Mexico. So what are these drug-related charges to Venezuela? Colombia had the world's most powerful drug lord up until into the 1980s. They even made a TV series about the guy. Yeah, sure, maybe things would flow through Venezuela. Things also flow through Brazil. Things also flow through Chile. So now you get to ask yourself the question, dear listeners, as you now go through or into the rest of your Sunday, which is now the back end of your weekend, go and sit and think. This makes things very precarious. This whole discussion makes things precarious. First and foremost, work yourself back into 2025 with the name change to the U.S. Department of Defense, which then became the Department of War. Ask yourself, why would you change a ministry's name? And specifically when that name change happened, when the announcement was done with the name change, that this is now to start sending signals to people. First and foremost, getting into the African context, the strikes that took place in the northwest territory of Nigeria. It's a Muslim-dominated province of Nigeria, meaning the dominant religion there. But it's also the same particular provincial areas of Nigeria that is responsible for these abductions of Christians, of Nigerian Christians that has taken place. Now, this points to one or two things. Specifically, that most of Nigeria's presidents had been Muslim, that they don't care about the Christian side of the Nigerian population. It potentially shows that there is some underlying issues between the Christian and Muslim populations of the country, and that there are influences happening, specifically as we still know that Boko Haram still exists. Now, in this world specifically, dear listeners, things are not always what they supposedly are. Before we end our show for this morning session of my Sunday morning take, we quickly take a short musical break, and we come back right after that. And coming back there were the sounds of the war on drugs, literally. look, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry for for the subliminal messaging right there. But I did, you know, I just wanted, you know, a sort of like a good, like, ending song to reach us up to the end. And I reached into an artist that I, you know, really follow. Whose literal name is the war on drugs, which is literally the accusation or the particular political fight that Donald Trump has identified. But before we continue, we'll take a quick break.
Time for the big visit back home this festive, and the funds are low. Take control with Express Credit. Tick off your wish list. Visit expresscredit.com.na or call 9500-500. Same day approval. Easy loans from 3,000 to 32,000.
Coming back there from the quick break, dear listeners, and just citing specifically that there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of weird things that popped off, specifically between last night. Well, not last night. Saturday early morning hours and into this particular morning session here on, my Sunday morning take, because things are still happening. We actually have to see. Because I'm literally waiting on the what's their name? The UN Security Council to see what they're obviously going to say, but it looks like they're having a weekend as well. And to try and understand, you know, what were some of, how are they going to, you know, balance these particular things that happened here and what's it going to look like? But on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this morning session of my Sunday morning take. We'll see each other again, same time, same place next week. That's our next Sunday. Alternatively, during the course of the week, you can catch me here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company.
You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday.